Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Wednesday packed. What's new live in Los Angeles? It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, perhaps the biggest college football weekend of the year. Joel Klatt joined us in 1 hour. There's some spectacular games. It's a great weekend, not only for the NFL, but for college football. Joel Klatt in 1 hour. Joy Taylor, today, not on as many Tylenol. The teeth are feeling better, I imagine, this morning.
It's a little bit better. I actually haven't taken any Tylenol this morning.
There you go.
I try not to take too much medication.
I'm the same way.
It's not great for your liver. I do enough to damage that organ.
Yeah, same. Did too much last night.
It's got a plate hurt. Deal with the pain.
Well, there are always lots of movies made about monumental moments in world history, and there are books written about those. And in sports, most of your great books are written about dynasties and greatness. And there are several books. I've read a couple of them about the Patriots dynasty. And Jeff Benedict wrote one. Ian O'Connor, a terrific journalist, wrote the other. There is a new book out. It's not out yet. You can buy it. It's called It's Better to Be Feared by journalist Seth Wickersham. Some excerpts came out this morning. And the first excerpts came out this morning. It's pretty harsh on Bill Belichick. He may not have been the primary source for this book. He gets bludgeoned, and books all have key sources. I say, when I read a book, I can generally tell who's talking and who's not talking. That's more interesting to me sometimes than actual books. Who's leaking what? Belichick gets clobbered here, and it makes it sound like Belichick's the reason it broke up. And I want to discuss this. I'm going to first share a couple of the excerpts. One of them is, Wickersham writes that Brady ultimately left New England not only because both Belichick and Kraft refused to commit to his stated goal of playing to 45, but because he wanted to be in an organization that welcomed his input rather than ignored him. He wanted to be heard. All relationships are probably some degree like that. A second big excerpt from the book this morning. In 2018, a few years ago, they all met, Belichick, Brady, Kraft, trying to set aside their grievances. Brady came out and, was tired of taking team-friendly deals and then had no input on how the money was spent. That's different than the Aaron Rodgers situation, where he or Russell Wilson aren't taking team-friendly deals. Brady's saying, I'm giving you guys big pay cuts. How come we don't have any good receivers? How come we don't have any good tight ends? There's another moment. This is pretty harsh. Late September, Aspen, Colorado, Bob Kraft was there. It was a wealthy guy conference, I'm sure. And he was telling people as he left the hotel, he had bumped in to many of his friends at the hotel. And he said, I have to leave. We're playing Detroit. And he told one of the guys, I'm leaving the most brilliant people in the world. I'm getting smarter here, and I got to go hang out with the biggest blankety-blank person in my life, my head coach. Doesn't look good for Belichick. Also here, Kraft sometimes groaned to confidence that Belichick didn't show him any respect, but he was in no rush to get rid of him. I don't want to play for Bill anymore, Brady at one point said in 2017. So there's also a moment here where Eric Mangini, when he was coaching the Jets, Belichick, there was a coach's dinner for the NFL. Wives were there, and Belichick ignored Mangini's wife. And Mangini went over to Bill and said, hey, blankety blank, you confronted Bill about his grumpiness. So there's a lot there. Buy the book. I already have. Listen, it Belichick comes off as, grumpy and intense. And caustic and incredibly difficult. You see a lot of this. I don't think it's a wild, crazy, hard to detect opinion. You see it at his weekly press conference. I am not going to defend Belichick, but I will say this. is that you had three very unique components to this relationship. You had Bill Belichick, the Northeast academic. That's where the Ivy League's at. Belichick's mom spoke seven languages. His dad, big say in the history of scouting. So you have the grumpy Northeast academic. Very easy to play in a movie. Then you had Bob Kraft, the global visionary. Likes to get along with people, but could squish them if they got in his way. And then you had the California athlete. Joyful, fun, tends to, as this book says, be at his best, not with a chip on his shoulder, but when he's surrounded by loving and supportive people. And there's a Beatles feel to it. There really is. You know, and I'm not some Beatles historian, but let's be honest. John Lennon was the academic, the brilliant mind. Paul McCartney was sort of the visionary. And Ringo Starr, he lightened everybody up. All brilliant. But there is a price to be paid for winning. And that price is, as Ben Franklin said, if everybody thinks the same, nobody's thinking. I tell young broadcasters, willing to be hated, willing to sacrifice, willing to be told you're wrong. Oh, you're not? Go to Twitter. Get likes. Success is hard. It's really hard. I was texting a general manager this weekend after a win, and he's like, it's so hard. That's why you have to put your arms around winning in the NFL. It's so hard. You can have a great quarterback. You can have very few holes. This GM won on the road. He's like, it's so hard, so exhausting, and so much fun and exhilarating when you win. And when I look at this book, is whoever's telling their story is going to come out looking better, and whoever says, I'm not going to talk to this author in all these books, is going to come out looking worse. But in the end, none of this works without the vision of Kraft, the academic DNA of Belichick, and then Brady's ability to be the glue, to make it all work, to take pay cuts, to be joyful, to make guys laugh. I mean, you've never heard a single ex-Brady teammate. This is remarkable. Ever criticize him. Like, every teammate likes it. Even the teammates that are difficult, Antonio Brown, even the teammates who could burn people out, Randy Moss, Tom's had a lot of people. Wes Welker broke Tom's heart when they let him go and went to Peyton Manning, Tom's rival. And Wes and Brady still get along. Like, this is why it became great. Because there's a sacrifice. This book could have been written about a law firm. It could have been written about the Beatles. It could have been written about a tech company. And I would say this, is that NBA and baseball dynasties do not last nearly as long as this football dynasty. And perhaps there's something to be learned here. In the NBA and in baseball, the players' unions are much, much stronger. And in football, the players have very little power. Aaron Rodgers, I'm annoyed. Suck it up, Buttercup. See you in camp. NBA, Ben Simmons and James Harden, I'm out. Teams are trapped. Owners are trapped. League is trapped. Tom Brady's annoyed. All right, you'll have to redo your contract in a couple years. Maybe you can get out. Is that the NFL stars have no power. And so they have to sacrifice. Young professional millionaires have to sacrifice. Suck it up and deal with it. And it can actually extend a dynasty. Nobody ever wants to hear that, but maybe if you give employees in any business too much power, it's hard to sustain success. Maybe the secret to the NFL and these long dynasties is the stars. Forget just average players. Tom Brady's got no power. I mean, it took him like 18 years to be able to move. Aaron Rodgers has no power. But all I know is when I read this book, it's going to end up making certain people look bad. The excerpts this morning make, you know, Belichick just look like no fun, and he really just got in the way of the whole thing. But I think his sort of rigid academic nature worked perfectly with Tom Brady's sort of California, joyful, sort of loving personality. And it kind of, although it was caustic a lot, It probably somewhere psychologically drove Brady to prove to this academic who will never love him, you're going to love me. I mean, how many books and stories have we heard about that? The dad that's tough on their son. And the son spends the rest of their life trying to prove to dad that he's worthy. And in a weird sort of way, this all worked perfectly. It really does. It feels like I'm reading about like Lennon and McCartney and Ringo Starr. And the greatest band ever, the greatest football team ever, none of it works without the vision of one, the academic nature of the other, and the loving joyfulness of Tom Brady, who is able to take hard coaching, take the squabbles, take the fight. I mean, folks, the greatest basketball team ever, the Chicago Bulls. We all watched that documentary. My takeaway was, damn, there's a lot of conflict. I mean, Michael had his cigars, Michael's having his fun, and there's great joy. But man, it is hard to be the greatest. The greatest band, the greatest football team, the greatest law firm, the greatest tech company, the greatest basketball team. You know, I never thought the Patriots would be nearly as fun to look back on as Jordan's Bulls. Like, Jordan's Bulls was just crazy town. You got Rodman going to Vegas for a weekend, but you start looking at the Jordan Bulls. Who's the academic? Phil Jackson. Who's the visionary? Say what you want. Jerry Krause made that Scottie Pippen deal. And then you have the star-driven, aspirational, willful athlete. We all bang on Belichick and his grumpiness. We all bang on Jerry Krause and his personal insecurities. Part of the reason it worked is those guys too. If we're all thinking the same, nobody is thinking. Read the book, sounds fun, a lot of sacrifices, and great is really hard to pull off.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Jerry Jones talks a lot. He's an owner. Most don't. Jerry does. He was talking about Mike McCarthy, his head coach, and his clock management issues, which have surfaced twice, and we're only in week, what, four? So Jerry Jones talked about that.
Other teams have issues with clock management. That's part of the game. And so let's cut things some slack and realize that if you do enough plays, we were critical of Garrett when he was here. And don't you think that goes with the territory? I know firsthand Mike's capabilities. I know how he approaches it, the logic that he uses, and I'm not a bit concerned about his ability to manage a tight situation.
You do not need to be an A coach to win a Super Bowl. I went back and looked at the last 20 coaches to win the Super Bowl. Now, most, your Sean Paytons, your Belichick, your Tony Dungy's, your Andy Reid's, you know, there are a lot of A's in there. But Gary Kubiak won one, Mike McCarthy won one, Doug Peterson an A. You don't have to have a Hall of Fame head coach, is my point, to win a Super Bowl. But if you don't, you have to have something that is above the league. You have to have a component that's above the league somewhere else. I'll give you an example. Gary Kubiak. That defense had a nickname. When defenses are great, I can say, oh, they had a nickname. The Steel Curtain. Oh, yeah. Monsters of the Midway. Oh, yeah. This was the no-fly zone. It was the number one total defense. Von Miller was young, healthy, and unblockable. That defense was sensational. So Gary Kubiak can get a ring. Gary's a fine coach, but we don't look at him as a first ballot Hall of Fame guy. Mike McCarthy, what did he have? Well, it was the Packers' best defense in the last 20 years. It was number two, but they had Aaron Rodgers healthy in his prime. Doug Peterson, you forget how dominating the Eagles' offensive line was. It was the number one rated offensive line. They dominated the league in time of possession, and they were a top three running team. Now, the defense was good. And by the way, Denver and Kubiak had Peyton Manning's leadership, and Aaron Rodgers had a good defense. And Doug Peterson, you know, the defense was good too, but they had this suffocating offensive line, and they just took the ball away from you. You couldn't get the ball back. Cleveland's got a little bit of that this year, where you just can end up sitting watching the Browns' offense if you're a quarterback. And so now Dallas would say, what about our wide receivers? It's 2021. Bragging about your wide receiver unit is like being in Hawaii and bragging about your tan. Everybody's got one. You know, 15 years ago, I've got an iPhone. Woo, cool. In 2021, having an iPhone is the baseline standard for playing in the tech space. Like, that's the baseline. Yes, the Cowboys have a very good wide receiver unit. Just on the West Coast alone, so do the Seahawks and the Niners and the Rams and the Chargers and Arizona and Denver. Just the NFC West teams. Oh, the Raiders. Every single NFC and AFC West team. Kansas City is loaded at wide receivers. That can't be your thing. The standard in 2021 is you got to have playmakers. The best coach in the world, Bill Belichick, last 3 years hasn't had them. Can't win games. So I don't think Dallas has the defense or the specialty like the no-fly zone, Aaron Rodgers in his prime, the Philadelphia Eagles dominating O-line, time of possession, and running game. I don't think they have that. And the question now, as Kevin Clark said yesterday, are you wasting precious years of Dak's prime, which is probably about five and a half years left?
I think that Kellen Moore is saving his job right now, and Dak Prescott is saving his job right now. And what's amazing about Dak Prescott is I think if you look at the 2016 quarterbacks, and that's Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, and Carson Wentz, the first two picks in the draft were propped up by the system around them and by the coaching staff and by the talent around them and a good GM. And Dak Prescott was doing it on his own. He was John Wick out there. But Dak Prescott is now the driving force of the Cowboys. And that's important to know. And you need a coach who's up for it. Maybe that's Kellen Moore next year. It's not Mike McCarthy. He's not helping them win games. There's other better coaches who are more in line for Dak Prescott. Do not waste Dak Prescott. Hire a better coach.
Yeah, not the first person to say it, won't be the last.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Better to Be Feared is the book about the Patriots dynasty. And there are many excerpts coming out this morning if you're on the West Coast, or in the afternoon if you're on the East Coast today. One of them is, quote, Brady was tired of taking team-friendly deals with no input on how the money was being spent. Belichick told associates that every organizational decision now was in support of Brady, geared toward pleasing him and making him successful. And that Kraft meddled with the team, sometimes with opinions, sometimes with restrictive budgets. Well, owners have a right to opinions, by the way, and budgets as well. You don't want to be over the cap, right? So it is funny. We all know this, right? Like, it's easier to leave any company or relationship if you're not having the success you want. It's hard to leave success. It's hard to walk away from big money, happiness, big success. Like, but there are some divorces, business life, like, you're like, okay, it's really ugly and you're over it. And there are excerpts in the book where Brady is telling people in 2017, I'm out of here. But it was way easier to leave in 2020 when they had no skill people. And my question is, remember, the Patriots finished second on Stephon Diggs. They almost got him. They finish second, third maybe on DeAndre Hopkins. If they land Stephon Diggs and they can draft a tight end and another receiver, does he leave? That's an interesting question. I think it's much harder to leave. So Bill, his mistake in all this, and by the way, most people in the media were making the same mistake. Bill's thinking Tom is really declining and Tom is showing it wasn't the declining. It was you can't draft skill people. They're terrible. Because right now, I think the worst receiving core in the league is New England. I said that last year. I said it the year before. I'm not doing rearview mirror stuff. So Tom made these sacrifices. And my question is, so we know it's Tom's not driven by money. Like, he made sacrifices for 10, 15 years. We know he's not driven by money. And my question is, if Bill Belichick, we have found the hole in his game. He is not great drafting skill people. He drafted Sony Michel over Nick Chubb. He drafted N'Keal Harry over Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown. So, and by the way, it's not like N'Keal Harry is almost Deebo Samuel. One's a star, one can't play. So I think that's the interesting component here is it's easy to say, I'm tired of it. Brady in 2017, I'm out of here. It made it really easy because he's looking around at what Mahomes has, and he's looking around at what Russell Wilson has, and he's looking at what Jameis Winston has, and he's like, I can't do that. I do wonder if, you know, in his last year, one of those third-round tight ends became Gronk, and then they did land Stephon Diggs. Then do you look like a crazy person because you have the best coach, a great defense, a good offensive line? But I think these ugly books maybe don't get written as much. But I think we every coach has a hole. You know, the Pete Carroll hole and the Mike Tomlin to some degree. They're so pro-player that sometimes players take advantage of them. Big Ben has taken advantage of, you know, Tomlin's willingness to heed some power to the players. Pete Carroll, we've had multiple players on this show that have been with the Seahawks. Pete is so pro-player, sometimes players take advantage of him. And I think Tomlin and Pete are both loved by players, sometimes too much. They're too nice. They're too pro-player. Belichick probably goes the other way. He's a little too intense. But I think the book's going to be a fascinating read. Brady is a really interesting cat that – money matters to him. He was tired of taking pay cuts, but it didn't matter enough that he wouldn't do it for winning. I think when Tom got upset is, okay, I'm taking these pay cuts, and we're not just bad at receiver. This is the worst wide receiving core and tight end unit in the league.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Let's bring in Joel Klatt, teach him some football here, the voice of college football at Fox. Boy, was he good on that Soldier Field Notre Dame Wisconsin game.
There was so much going on. And in the last couple of minutes, what? There was so much going
There's
on.
There's a lot to absorb.
Whew.
I know. It's kind of
five donuts in your life. You just shot your credibility before your big news about the 10 players that run 19 miles an hour or longer.
So let me start with Notre Dame Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because you and I have both been big advocates of Brian Kelly. We think he's a very good coach.
Yeah.
But in the world we live in, if you don't win a championship, you can't beat Alabama, you're no good. If you took Alabama out of the sport, I think Notre Dame can go toe-to-toe last 5 years with everybody, including Georgia. I've seen it twice. This is actually, in my opinion, not a very good Notre Dame team.
This version to this year?
No. They're
not as good as they've been the last couple of years.
Alabama can just reload. Notre Dame doesn't. They have down years. I think they're just coaching their way to wins. I don't think they're that much better than Wisconsin. I don't think they're a 42-13 better team than Wisconsin.
No, their game plan was terrific last week, and it was so what's the word? It was heartening to go meet with them on Thursday last week, and we went in there because I never get a chance to actually go meet in person with Notre Dame. It's always calls because we don't do their home games. So because the game was in Chicago, I thought I'm going to go out a day early and go to Notre Dame and meet with them in person. And I'm so glad that I did because you actually get kind of a better feel for the culture, the atmosphere, and for the people in general versus doing a Zoom or doing a conference call. And I came away from that even more impressed with Notre Dame than I had been before. And it was largely due to the fact that when I meet with coaches in person, you get a really good sense based on what game plan that they're about to use in the game. Listen, I watch the film. I know what I'm looking at. And so I can tell when a game plan's not going to be great.
Right.
Right? I mean, you just do. And you can tell when a guy's ego is getting in the way of his game plan. Well, I don't care what they do on defense. We'll be able to run the ball. Okay. No, you won't. Right? Right. And that would have been the case if Notre Dame said, listen, we're Notre Dame. We're going to run the ball against Wisconsin. And to their credit, they didn't do that. They said, listen, if we hand the ball off, it's going to be a token handoff. Jack's going to have to throw the ball 40, 45 times in order to do it. And they had a game plan that was setting themselves up to win, and then they won.
Yeah.
And I think that in large part, that belief seeps down into their players, you know, and obviously that return, that kick return from Chris Tyree is really what kind of blew the game wide open. And obviously Pine did a nice job coming in, but it was set up by the fact that their plan was correct from the get-go. The only reason they were in the game 10-10 to start the fourth quarter or whatever it was is because they weren't trying to sit there and run their head into a brick wall.
That's right.
The entire game. So I agree with you. I think Notre Dame is probably a year or two away from being really, really good. But this team is maximizing itself based on the fact that the coaches are putting them in great positions to succeed.
So this week you have Michigan at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I get asked about – there's a lot of Michigan graduates apparently out in California.
Okay.
I don't know if that's where they're migrating to, but everywhere I go, there's Michigan people out mm-hmm. here. And on Saturdays, if I go to the grocery store, there's Michigan hats. There's somebody, hey, what do you think of Harbaugh? And I'm like, listen, he can't get the quarterback right. I think he's done a lot right. He can't figure it out. And I can't figure out how he can't figure it out because he's a former quarterback. Don't tell me. The school had Tom Brady. It had Kerry Collins. They've had good NFL
Kerry
quarterback.
Collins was a Penn State
guy.
My
bad.
They had Brian Greasy.
Elvin Gerball.
Then it was like Drew Henson and Brady.
They've had good quarterbacks.
They've had pretty good quarterbacks.
By Big Ten standards, excellent. So let's just talk Michigan right now. And I want to talk a little bit about the offense. They do appear to have a little more juice.
Yeah. So, first of all, they did a great self-scout in the offseason. And they realized what they were doing well and what they weren't doing well. They threw the ball too often last year and thought that they were going to spread it out and become one of these high-flying teams that could go and score a lot of points in this spread system. And Josh Gattis did that at Alabama, and then it wasn't paying off at Michigan. It just wasn't in their DNA. And while he liked some of the pieces that they have, you know what they've done? They went back to the run game, but not just the run game that he brought. There was this marriage between the spread run game that Josh Gattis has and what Harbaugh was at Stanford, which is a I know this is technical stuff, but heavy gap team. They're going to pull linemen, and they're going to get downhill. And so now they're trying to marry that up, similar to what Oklahoma has done the last couple of years, similar to what the Baltimore Ravens have done, by the way. Very similar to what John Harbaugh has done with Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens. And that marriage of committing to the run game but also expanding how they're attacking in the run game has really benefited them. Now, what remains to be seen is when that gets taken away, can they throw the ball? Has the quarterback developed? And last week, it didn't. They only completed one pass in the second half against Rutgers. One. Now, Rutgers is vastly improved under Greg Schiano. But I can't wait to see this week when they go up against what I feel like is somewhat of an immovable force in the front seven of that Wisconsin defense. Can Michigan go out there and throw the football to move it? Because last week, Notre Dame told me, we ain't running the ball on these guys. They're too good. They're too big.
Right.
And so this week with Michigan, will they be able to throw the football? I think is a fascinating storyline going into this game.
By the way, Saturday at noon, Fox, Michigan at Wisconsin. I'll be watching. I love these Midwest college football games.
Do you?
I feel like
you always rip on the Midwest.
No. Hey, listen, I fly over it all the time and admire it.
Unbelievable. So, that type of
it's very
you
elitist.
Know what people in the Midwest do that I also do
what?
Weekly? Enjoy donuts. You're welcome. I love donuts, and so do you.
Hey, I like beer. They like it there. Okay, let's segue to this.
Do you mix it in with your wine?
No, I don't like wine.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'm hearing about, you know, Alabama's going to roll everybody. And I don't really take, when you go to Florida in the SEC, when you go to an SEC road game, yes, that's when Florida can play with Alabama.
Sure.
Okay, But I do, when I watch Georgia play, mm-hmm. and this is about the third time in 4 years, I do look up and say, if you switch jerseys, I'm not sure I could tell much. It does look like Georgia and Bama feel like a cut above.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. And I think, now having said that, I also think that the sport is in a really good spot because there's a lot of teams vying for those next couple of spots.
Yeah.
Right? I think that 3, 4, 5, 6 is somewhat interchangeable. I think that even more teams are going to have a shot at the playoff. But you're right. Alabama and Georgia seem a cut above, and I can't wait for this matchup because this is going to be the first version of Georgia where Kirby has adjusted on the offensive side and can also be explosive. Remember, he was just trying to go in there and say, okay, we're going to out Alabama by just playing great defense and running the football and doing what Bama did in 2012. And the problem was is that he didn't realize that Nick had done an amazing job of evolving as a program and becoming a program that could go beat Ole Miss, whatever it was last year, 62-47.
Right.
You know, and also win the big tough games. But that's why I'm so fascinated with this Georgia team this year, is that with JT Daniels, who's completing over 70% of his passes, he can get vertical down the field.
Yeah.
They can be explosive on offense. Meanwhile, they have a defense that's only given up like one touchdown.
No, it's like you can watch Georgia's defense. It's all NFL bodies.
That's exactly right.
It's all NFL guys.
That's exactly right. So this version, this matchup this year, and I expect to see Georgia and Alabama in the SEC championship, and I expect both of them to also go to the playoff. But this year feels different just because Georgia has also evolved. And so we're going to see Kirby's first opportunity to play on what I would say similar footing with Bama.
Okay, so, like to be measured in my opinions. And every year
telling America you've only had 5 donuts in your life is not measured.
Probably 3.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Hey, I don't even know what to do with this right now.
But I watched Spencer Rattler.
Okay.
And everybody's like, that guy's a number one pick. And my takeaway is, oh no. I don't know.
Take the lightning bolts out of your eyes.
Okay, time out. Big arm. Sloppy mechanics. You guys all got this guy as...
You're totally blinded to the problems in front of Spencer Rattler, which is fine. Listen, I get it. I get it. You can see speed randomly from an NFL defense, which, congratulations, you did. You saw it. Your lion eyes,
like,
you know,
X-ray
they
vision.
Didn't lie to you. X-ray vision. Apparently on Saturdays, your X-ray vision takes the day off for college football. But I think that the problem isn't with Rattler for OU.
Okay.
I think that he is special from a talent perspective. And, yes, he can force the ball at times. But the problem with Oklahoma is their offensive line.
Okay.
Their offensive line has been atrocious this year. And I don't normally say that about college kids.
Oklahoma
it's been terrible.
Almost always has a great O-line.
Which has been the surprising part, which is why Rattler, everyone's like, what's wrong with Rattler? You just assume that everything else is similar with Oklahoma.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, they can't block down linemen. Akeem Mezidor, number 90 for West Virginia, was unblocked about 5 or 6 times. They don't do a good job getting movement on the double team, so when they're trying to pull their guard and tackle around for their bread and butter play, the GT play, they can't get them going up the field. The backs have guys in their face. Rattler has guys in their face. And it's a chain reaction. You see, if you can't run the football at Oklahoma, and I know Riley's an air raid guy. He's not. He's a run-oriented coach. And the reason that is because when he runs it well, he gets to the play-action game. That creates the explosive plays.
Yeah.
When you've got play-action, now you can also be two-dimensional in your passing game and drop back and pass without pass rushers coming after you. They've got none of that right now.
All right.
And Rattler has almost no chance to succeed. Their fan base was chanting for their backup quarterback last week, and that was an atrocious look for what I feel like is a very good fan base. Stop chanting for the backup quarterback to go out there and have guys in his lap. You know what's going to be different for Caleb Williams? Nothing. Nothing, because you can't block in front of him.
Okay, that's fair. This isn't even speculation. This is not a rumor. It is not speculation. But it's an interesting talking point.
Okay.
So of the 7 or 8 great jobs.
In college football.
Yeah.
Okay.
Regardless of what people will tell you in the Big Ten or the SEC, USC remains one. Why?
There's no doubt.
Because they're in the 2nd or 3rd best recruiting state, and they're the biggest brand in the state. Every time they get the right coach, it takes about an hour, and so they're great.
I would argue, just to your point, there's only a couple of schools that are at any moment 3 years away from going to a playoff. USC is one of those teams.
I totally agree. Now, let me ask you this. Again, I am not trying to ignite something here. But Penn State is not in that, though very strong. They're in the next level of 10. If you were a coach there, and you could go from recruiting.
But I'm not trying to ignite anything, guys.
I'm just saying, if I was James Franklin, I would feel there is a ceiling. Now, it's not a low ceiling,
okay,
but there's a ceiling at Penn State, and there really isn't one at USC. Would you listen to USC if they called?
I think it would be foolish for him not to listen.
Oh, that's all I'm asking.
It'd be foolish for anyone not to listen. I mean,
Saban's 70, so I wouldn't listen. Saban doesn't listen.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I think you can put him in a different category
because of
his age and his success. Like, he's the greatest coach in college football history.
That's right.
Like,
let's just take Saban done. And maybe Debo out.
Yeah, and I think Dabo would probably listen, although he's culturally too good of a fit at Clemson.
Yeah.
Having said that, everybody should listen if they call you. If you're Jeff Hafley at Boston College, if you're Mario Cristobal at
now,
Oregon.
Now, I don't like that. Time out.
Why wouldn't you listen if you're Mario Cristobal?
Okay.
Just because Phil Knight would be mad at you?
That's like having in that's a big voice. I don't want him. That's like
I don't disagree, but you at least listen. You take the call.
I don't think I take the call if I'm Mario Cristobal. I'm not going to let that out because it'll get out, by the way. Everything gets out because yapper's out there in the media. Most aren't like me, journalists.
Big J journalists, apparently still go blind on Saturdays.
My dad took days off as an optometrist. Okay, so what I'm saying is there are relationships. That's why married guys shouldn't go to the club. Don't even go there. Don't even go into the club. You're married. I don't even want Mario Cristobal to take a call from USC.
But why doesn't that also apply to James Franklin? He's married too, but you want him to just waltz right into the club.
No, but
you want him to walk into the club and be like, yo, what's up?
No, the difference is they're both about
bottle in the back corner.
The difference is Phil Knight.
Put a sparkler in it too. I'm here, guys.
I don't even know what the hell that means. Literally, I eat Fig Newtons when I go to the club. So my point is, Phil Knight is different. Phil Knight is the most important booster in the history of the sport. You don't screw with Phil Knight. You don't care. You married guys. I know when you walk by the Kitty Cat Lounge.
You married? Like, you're not married?
No, I am. And when I drive by the Kitty Cat Lounge, you know what I say? Meow. Not interested. You married guys that pull into the parking lot and say, you know, I'm just going to go out there into the club.
Oh,
it's like, no. No, you don't.
But the reason I'm so, like, dumbfounded right now is you literally just said James Franklin should
different.
Walk into the
because
club
he doesn't have Phil
with
Knight.
A sparkler.
He wouldn't tick off Phil Knight. He'd tick off rural Pennsylvania.
He goes again, bashing on rural Pennsylvania.
Those donut eaters. am I wrong here?
Yes, you're wrong. Absolutely, Mario should take a look at that job.
Oh, I think you're crazy. You don't even take that call. If that gets out to Phil Knight.
What's the better job?
USC.
But he can't take the call?
Be way better to be married to George Clooney than me, but my wife shouldn't go and hang out with him.
Oh, she absolutely should because she would get donuts and all sorts of stuff that she's
not you're out of here. All right, Joel Klatt is doing Michigan at Wisconsin. It's great.
Magnum in the back. James Franklin.
That's a language I do not speak. I don't even know what I thought sparklers were one day of the year on 4th of July.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know this saying is that your greatest strength in life is often your greatest weakness. And you know, Bill's strength is he treats Brady like one of the guys, and then Bill's weakness became Bill still treats Tom like one of the guys. He's an American icon, and that you will hear this from time to time, and it's understandable that most people can't relate to this. Most people will never relate to this. Is you have a friend, and since there's only about 8 of these people in the country in sports, your friend becomes a superstar. Not like an all-star baseball player. An all-star baseball player, Mike Trout could put a cap and glasses on, walk around L.A., and nobody cares. But you'll hear people say this all the time about people. Well, my friend got successful and famous, and he changed. Yes, because his life changed. He can't go out in public. He can't go to a restaurant. He can't go out in public. Can't go to a movie. There are more demands on his time. In this book... it says, one of the quotes here is, Brady's adjustment to worldwide fame came actually very early in his career, and it made it very difficult to go out publicly. Cars would follow him home from work. This is early in his career. At one point, during a week leading up to the 2002 Super Bowl, this is 19 years ago. This is early Tom before the commercials, before Giselle, before 5 of his Super Bowls. This is early Tom in Boston. It's not like he's in a cool town like Miami or LA and he had global commercials. In 2002, they were playing the Rams, 2002 Super Bowl, and he and friends decided to, let's go to Bourbon Street and go out and have a good dinner. He tried to enter a bar, just tried to enter it. A crowd formed around him so quickly and so thick that it took them off down off the sidewalk. A crowd gathered around Tom. Not can I get a selfie, not can I get an autograph. This wall of people formed around him. They couldn't get into the restaurant as he was just walking to the restaurant. And I don't think Belichick quite got that because Belichick never went to dinner with Brady. That's well documented. He didn't get it. When you get to be this famous, and I'm not talking local TV anchor famous, those people walk out at night and it's selfies for a local TV anchor. Oh my God, I've been watching you blankety blank forever. More people pulling at you, more demands, higher pressure, you hire security. You can't go to the store. You can't go out. If you don't get it, then you get eliminated from their social circle. Even if you were buddies in high school and buddies in college, you can't ever use the term, hey, do you know who you're with? We need to, can't say stuff like that. Yeah, you ever have one of those guys? He wants to be the big shot. Hey, my buddy Tom, you know who he is? No, stars don't want you to say that stuff because Tom doesn't have to introduce himself everywhere. Dave Chappelle, the great comedian, once said, once you're famous, you're never unfamous. You may be infamous, but you're never unfamous. So just think that Brady literally couldn't walk down a street in New Orleans with famous people everywhere in New Orleans. There's entertainers, there's stars everywhere. He could not walk down the sidewalk 18 years ago, pre-Giselle, pre-commercials, pre-legend. He was just a great Pro Bowl quarterback. That's what he was back then. I mean, that's 2002. And so it's like, yeah, but Belichick never went out with him, never golfed with him, never went to dinner with him. He just thought he was Tommy. It's like, no, dude, you got Messi in the building. You have Ronaldo in the building. You've got LeBron in the building. It is a different life. I mean, I know people that have vacationed with Brady, a couple people that have vacationed with him, and they all say the same thing. He's a really happy guy, great guy, just a wonderful, wonderful guy. But you can't go out to normal places. That's why he's got like homes on places that even a lot of rich people don't have. Like you have to create a completely different life.